Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 18, Descriptions of Varnashram Dharma, text number 34. Ahārartam samīhita yuktam tat pranadharanam tatvam vimrishyate tena tadvijñāya vimuchyate ahārartam samīhita yuktam tat pranadharanam tatvam vimrishyate tena tadvijñāya vimuchyate ahārartam samīhita yuktam tat pranadharanam tatvam vimrishyate tena tadvijñāya vimuchyate. Ahara, to eat. Artham, in order. Samiheta, one should endeavor. Yuktam, proper. Tat, of the person. Prana, life force. Dharanam, sustaining. Tatvam, spiritual truth. Vimrishyate is contemplated. Tena, by that strength of the mind, senses, and life air. Tat, that truth. Vigyaya, understanding. Vimuchyate, one is liberated. If required, one should endeavor to get sufficient foodstuffs, because it is always necessary and proper to maintain one's health. When the senses, mind and life air are fit, one can contemplate spiritual truth, and by understanding the truth, one is liberated. Therefore, if foodstuffs do not come automatically or by token begging, then one should endeavor to keep body and mind, one should endeavour to keep body and soul together so that one's spiritual program will not be disturbed. Normally, those who are endeavouring in spiritual life cannot maintain steady concentration on the truth if their mind and body are weakened by under-eating. I don't think anybody's got that problem here. On the other hand, extravagant consumption of food is a great impediment for spiritual advancement and should be given up. The word ahārartam in this verse indicates eating only to keep oneself fit for spiritual advancement and does not justify unnecessary collecting or warehousing of so-called alms. If one collects more than necessary for one's spiritual program, the surplus becomes a heavy weight that drags one down to the material platform. Om Jnana Timirandasya
Yunanjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmaye Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kada Mahayam Dadadisva Padantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Nangayate Gurim Yakripata Mahambande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam.
So, ahara artham, which means ahara artham, necessary eating, basically, that eating that is required. There's some interesting points here. Har artam, necessary eating, then dharanam prana, tat prana dharanam, that kind of eating that supports one's energy or one's life force. What for? Tattvam vimrisyate tena. By that strength of, or by that energy, one has the capacity then to meditate on the truth. Tadvigyaya vimuchyate, and then by that meditation one is liberated. So I guess the main point here is don't starve yourself to death thinking that you'll become liberated. But then, as is pointed out in the purport, don't overeat, because that'll also be an impediment. Krishna mentions in the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, yuktahara viharasya, yukta kama sachetasu, yukta svapna vabodhasya, yogo bhavati dukkaha. So, Krishna recommends yukta. I think that's words also here. Yuktam tat prana dharanam. Yuktam in this word, in this verse is translated as meaning proper. Proper. Yuktam means proper. In the verse in the Bhagavad Gita, yuktahara could also be translated. Yuktahara means proper eating. Yuktahara viharasya, proper sleeping. Although in that translation, Prabhupada uses the word regulated. So proper means regulated, practiced. yuktahara viharasya, yukta kama sachetasu, regulated activities, regulated recreation. Yukta svapnava bodhasya, regulated sleeping, regulated wakefulness. Yogo bhavati dukkaha, by that performance of yoga or of proper behaviour or regulated behaviour, one can dukkaha, destroy the miseries of material existence. So this proper eating, proper sleeping, proper activities, proper engagements, very, very important for a transcendentalist who wants to contemplate the absolute truth. Now, ordinarily we recognize that one who is renounced or shall we say, one who realizes the truth and is deeply absorbed in that, will also display a great deal of renunciation. There are some very outstanding exemplars of this fact, or this depth of realization, where one completely transcends the material platform. Raghunath Das is an interesting example. Raghunath Das was so absorbed in his bhajan, he was so absorbed in his devotional service, that he was not operating on the bodily platform, but he was deeply absorbed in his eternal serving mood as a manjari. And Raghunath Das displayed a high level of renunciation right from his youth. Right? His father and uncle, what was it, Hiranyagarbha and Govardhana Majumdar, were Bengali landholders, very, very wealthy and very, very influential. But Raghunath Das in his childhood had associated with devotees like Haridas Thakur and his friend, whose name escapes me now, but they're one of the priests in there in the local temple. So he was associating with very elevated devotees, and that association ignited the fire of devotion, and then consequently the renunciation that came as a as a result. So, you know, Raghunath Das, his desire very early on in his life was just to go and join Lord Chaitanya and be with the devotees. But his father and uncle wanted him to carry on the family business, and he would run away, and then they would bring him back, and then he'd run away again, and they'd bring him back. This was a cause of disturbance for the family. In fact, Lord Chaitanya told him, no, go home. Go home and continue your devotional service, but act as if you're just an ordinary materialist. He was married to a very beautiful wife. He had all the wealth, all the servants, all the influence that anybody would desire, but still he had this internal mood of renunciation. And Lord Chaitanya told him, when you get Lord Nityananda's mercy, then you'll be able to join with the devotees. So eventually his father and uncle realized that despite all of the allurements that would, you know, would entangle just an ordinary person, they realized that their son was a special personality, and that they really weren't going to be able to keep him any longer at home. And so they were resigned to the fact that their son was a renunciate. Of course, and a renunciate not just by dint of being renounced or just wanting to be renounced, but renunciate because of his deep absorption in Krishna consciousness, his deep absorption in his internal identity as a intimate servant of Radha and Krishna, and of the gopis. So Raghunath Das, eventually he did get away from home. The pujari didn't turn up to do Mangal Aarti, and so the head priest came to his house and said, you know, there's no pujari to do the aarti. Can you go and get the pujari? Go and wake up the pujari. Right? And so then Raghunath took that opportunity to leave home. And he travelled. He went all the way to Puri to be with Mahaprabhu. And then when he got to Puri, Lord Chaitanya put him under the care of Swarup Damodar and he gave him his personal shila and some gunjamala beads and instructed Raghunath Das how to perform his worship of the Chaligram Shila. And there's stories of how Raghunath would initially, when he went to Puri, then his family would send money and servants. And he, for some time, took that service and accepted that money. But then he thought, you know, what kind of a renunciate am I? You know, here I am. I'm receiving all of this money from my family and their servants are all looking after me. This is not very good. So he stopped receiving and he started, I think he started begging. There's a sequence of events outside the gate of the Jagannath Mandir. And then eventually he thought, oh, this begging, you know, it's not very good. It's a mercantile mentality. This is not a mood of devotion. When I see somebody coming, I think, will he give me something? Will he not give me something? You know, I'm like, still on a bodily concept. This is good. This person is good because he'll give me something. That person is bad because they won't give me anything. So I'm still on this platform of duality. So, and Lord Chaitanya would ask, you know, where is, he would ask, what's happening with Raghunath Das? You know, previously he was providing us all with feasts given by his family. Now we're not getting these feasts anymore. What's happening? And Swarup Damodar would say, oh, now he's just begging outside. And Lord Chaitanya would say, well, that's very good. He would encourage his renunciation. And then eventually he started just taking meals like at the soup kitchen, you know, the Jagannath Puri version of Hare Krishna Food for Life. And then eventually he became even more renounced, so that he was just rummaging around in the rubbish tip and getting the rotten rice and leftovers that even the cows and the other animals wouldn't eat, and he would clean it and just keep some morsels of the Mahaprasad that had come from, that was just remnants of remnants of remnants, practically speaking. You know, it's said that Raghunath Das, at the height of his renunciation, could live on 4 or 5 or 6 drops of buttermilk every day. Right, which is just some yogurt, basically, you know, and that's it. Like, taking a charanamrita, that's it, you've had your meal for the day. And he was encouraged by Lord Chaitanya in that mood of renunciation, in that, extremely renounced, completely detached. And so, you know, when we see somebody who's very, very detached and we appreciate their devotion, it's a measure of their devotion that they're detached. But we have to be careful. Just being renounced isn't always a measure of a person's devotion. It could just mean that they're forcing themselves into being renounced. And that's not good for one's devotional life. I remember, I don't know, there are probably devotees who do it these days too, but when I joined up, there was always one or two brahmacharis who would just have a little bowl. Right? But then when it came to breakfast time, they would pile the bowl up till it was this high. So they'd be very, very renounced, just give me a little, but then I'd pile all the prasadam up. In those days, we used to have over where the boga cupboard is, there's a bunch of shelves in the wall. That was all flat, and it was a cupboard. And that's where the Mahaprasadam used to get locked. Right? You couldn't just go and get the Mahaprasadam when you wanted. The Mahaprasadam was locked away. But there are always devotees trying to find the key to break into the Mahaprasadam cupboard so they could get something to eat. So on the one hand, you know, very, very renounced, trying to give me a little bowl, but then on the other hand, trying to break into the prasadam cupboard to get something to eat. So this, you know, there's atihara, which is too much eating, but then there's, you know, also too much renunciation, being too renounced. And then, you know, there was one of the girls who was also very renounced, but you know, the Brahmacharinis knew that if they wanted to have their excess prasadam eaten, then they would just leave it in the fridge. And they knew that this devotee would eat all of the prasadam that was kept in the fridge. He would be very renounced at meal times, but you just have to open up the fridge and... So, ahara artam, we should eat what is necessary or what is required. And sometimes, especially for, you know, we're as beginners, we need to eat a little bit more. The senses, sarira avidya jau jatendriya tahiko, right? The senses are very strong. In fact, in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's song, he says the senses are a network of paths, as a network of paths leading to death. Right? So you know, we've got to control the senses, but we actually control the senses by engaging the senses. Rishikesha Rishikena Sevanam Bhakti Uchate. This is our process of renunciation, is to actually engage the senses in active service. And the tongue is one of the most strong of the senses, very powerful, the tongue. Two functions of the tongue, there's tasting and vibrating. Right? Tasting and vibrating. And both of them have to be controlled. Otherwise you get this thing, you know, no, I won't. But then... it gets out of control. So that's why yukta-hara, vahara-sya, yukta-kama-sa-cetasu, you know, this proper eating or regulated eating and engaging the tongue in positive engagements so that one's satisfied, so that one can be peaceful. Otherwise the tongue especially can really disturb us. It'll be, you know, we won't eat, but then we'll keep on thinking, oh, I've got to eat, and it pushes. Vacho vegam, manasakroda vegam, jiva vegam, udarapasta vegam. So vacho vegam is the urge to speak. Jiva vegam is the urge to taste something. To eat things. So that urge has to be engaged. Otherwise it creates a disturbance. And one can't then meditate on the absolute, on the truth. Tattvam vimrishyate tena. By the strength of one's by one's sensual strength. You know, as devotees, we have to be sensually, mentally, and physically strong so that we can meditate on the truth. So too much renunciation makes us disturbed. Of course, too much, this is the trick, too much engaging of the senses, especially the tongue in eating, and then you go the other way. So how to get the balance? This is a big dilemma for me in my first few years. I came to the Melbourne temple. One of my biggest worries about coming to Melbourne was, is the prasadam going to be good enough? Big concern. I was thinking, ooh, we're going to Melbourne. I wonder if the prasadam is going to be good, as good in Melbourne as it is in Adelaide. We got here on a Monday morning, and there weren't as many devotees for the Sunday feast because they'd gone to Adelaide for this festival that we came back with the devotees, and there was all of the Sunday feast left over, and there was all these big trays of barats. We don't eat barats so much these days, but barats were my favourite. So we arrived for breakfast and here was all this prasadam, so my anxiety was immediately relieved. Whoa, look at this feast, fantastic. But then, I quickly discovered, there's the Mangalarti sweets, then there's the fruit offering, then there's breakfast, then there's lunch, then there's the fruit offering, then there's the 7 o'clock, and then there's the 9 o'clock. And it's pretty hard to eat 7 meals a day and keep focused on things. So then it was a struggle. It's a struggle to, you eat the milk sweets and then go to try to chart your hours and go, and then, if you've eaten already 4 times and it's time to have the 7 o'clock, you've got indigestion because you can't put anything more in. So I was thinking, what is this? We're supposed to be renunciates and there's all this Mahaprasadam around here. How can you be a renunciate when you've got all of this temptation? How am I going to make spiritual advancement in this place when there's all this prasadam here? This is not fair. So this is one of the dilemmas of a young devotee is, then we hear the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya is encouraging everybody to eat 5 times as much as anybody could normally eat. And you fill the devotees right up to the neck with prasadam. So on the one hand, we have to be renounced, we've got to live an ordered lifestyle, don't eat too much, and then Lord Chaitanya encourages his devotees to eat 5 times as much as anybody else. So how do we manage all of this? Got to eat 5 times as much, but not eat too much. So it's a struggle to get the balance, to get the right balance. Ahara artam, so that the life force is focused. We have to be strength. We need strength, and physical and mental strength to do what we do. But at the same time, we have to check that engagement of the senses so that the senses aren't in control, but rather the intelligence and the mind is under control and the senses are in control. And of course that's done by the same practice or the same process that Raghunath Das was engaged in. By the depth of our Krishna consciousness, we're able to remain detached from things material. Or, shall we say, we can then use things appropriately in Krishna's service so that they're not an impediment but rather they're an aid for making progress in our spiritual life, and one automatically becomes detached. And of course that comes from our sadhana. This regulated practice of devotional service just doesn't mean a regulated eating, regulated sleeping, but also yukta karma, sachitta su, that our activities and especially our basic devotional practices are very stable and sound. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. So from hearing and chanting comes remembrance of Krishna. And not a superficial remembrance, not a, you know, forced kind of a remembrance, but as is described by Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the remembrance of Krishna is something that is deeply absorbing and in which one becomes completely immersed. Krishna mentions in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, was it Niraharasya Dehinam? Vishaya Vinivartante Niraharasya Dehinam Raso Vajam Ripsopyasya Param Dristva Nivartate. That when we're embodied, we'll always have to put up with the fact that the senses are going to be attracted to the objects of the senses. This is just a fact of life. Until death, we'll have to put up with the fact that the senses are attracted to the objects of the senses. That's what happens. That's how they work. For one whose mind and senses are not controlled, that creates a disturbance. But for one who's absorbed, one who gets a higher taste out of their devotional practices, then they're able to withstand the pushing and the pulling of the mind and the senses. Atcho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, mudura pasta vegam, etan vegam, yo visha heta tira, sarvam api mam priti vim sasisyat. This is the first verse of the Upadeshamrita, which says, you know, a person who can control the senses by engaging them in devotional service is eligible to make disciples all over the world. Prithivim sasisyat. All over the world one can give instructions to others because they're a swami or a goswami, one who has the senses under control. Dhira, sober person. So, you know, we're able to engage in devotional practices which give us that immersion in Krishna consciousness. In other words, it's not an imposition. It's something that we're not thinking, oh, I've got to remember Krishna all the time. I've got to remember Krishna. I've got to remember Krishna. But rather, we naturally will, as we make advancement, we'll become detached. But we're becoming detached not because, you know, we're pushing things away, but rather because we're deeply absorbing ourselves in remembering Krishna. Satatam kirtayanto mam yatam tascha dhrida brataha. The characteristic of the devotees is that they're always engaging in this process of hearing and chanting and the rendering of service with a vow of determination. And the devotees get great pleasure from that. What's that? There's another verse, matschita. What is it? Matschita matkata prana bodhayanta parasparam katayantascha mamnityam tusyanti cha ramanti cha. So, you know, the devotees like to hear and chant. They like to engage in devotional service. As a result of those engagements, then tusyanti cha, they get satisfaction from that. Tushti means satisfaction. Feels happy. Ramanti cha, they get pleasure from those engagements. There's another eating analogy, isn't there? When I think about it, in the Bhagavatam. Tushti pushti chudapayanam. Tushti pushti chudapayanam agasam, or something like that. Tushti pushti chud. When you eat, right, your desire to taste, night, because we're fasting today, right? So, you know, at times in the day you'll be thinking, oh boy, I wish I could have something to eat. Right? Isn't it funny, you know, some days we're regulated eating and sleeping and so forth, but then on some days just fast. It's like, fast. But devotional service is like this process of eating. Now let's see if I can get it right. Yes. By the process of eating, we satisfy the desire to taste nice things. Right? Although I just told the devotees that today is a non-grain feast. No gulab jamuns. And they already cooked the gulab jamuns yesterday. No rice, etc. So anyway, when we eat, we want to satisfy the desire to eat a variety of items. Not only that, we need to fill our belly. Right? We need to have the belly filled up. And we need to become strong. Right? We need strength. Otherwise, if we don't eat, we just become, I can't do anything. Right? I've got no energy. So when you're eating, one is very enthusiastic. Yes, give me the sabji. This sabji, that sabji, the other sabji. Yes, I'll have the rice. Give me a couple of samosas, especially when we're just starting out. We've been fasting all day and the feast has arrived and then we say, yes, give me this, give me that, give me that, fantastic. Just stick it on. You know, you can tease the devotees sometimes. They've had all of the feast and then you just go around with a rice bucket. You say, we just have a bit of rice. I go, no. Just one piece of rice. No. You just have to show it to them. Previously it was, yes, give me. Right? Then you show them one little piece of rice. So, when the belly is full up and we've had a chance to taste everything, then we become fully satisfied. Belly is full, and we're nourished. When we have the enthusiasm to, we have the strength to do whatever we want. So devotional service is also like that. The practice of devotional service also. If we engage in, especially if we're engaging in the hearing and the chanting, the basic practices of course there's prasadam, we take prasadam also, but there's the hearing and chanting that gives us the deep absorption in Krishna consciousness. Then our and devotional service is, it's variegated. There are so many activities that we can perform. It's not like we have to necessarily be stuck doing the same thing all the time. But there are a variety of engagements in devotional service. So our natural propensity to want to do a variety of things is naturally engaged. As a result of that engagement, we become satisfied. Our propensity to engage in material activities decreases, and our enthusiasm for engaging in devotional service increases. So naturally we become renounced. Just like a person who's eaten a full meal, you know, they naturally become renounced. Right? Fill somebody up with prasadam and then all of a sudden they say, no more. So by being engaged in devotional service, fully absorbed in devotional service, fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, just like Raghunath does, he's fully engaged, and so such to the point, you know, he was able to live on 6 drops of buttermilk every couple of days. By that absorption. But the desire to engage in devotional service just increases, interestingly enough. The desire to engage in material activities for a devotee diminishes. As when you eat a meal, you know, you don't want to eat anymore. But when we engage in devotional service, our desire for material activities stops, but our desire for spiritual engagement increases. So it's not that we, you know, don't do anything. Oh, now I'm very renounced, I don't do anything. No. When we make advancement in devotional service, then our desire to engage in service to Krishna increases and increases. And we get more and more pleasure from doing that, more and more satisfaction. Tushti. Pushti chud. Or tushyanti cha ramanti cha. We get satisfaction and pleasure from the proper practice of devotional service. Very important. So this balancing act, if you like, especially from eating. And it'll be difficult on a day like today, you know, because we're fasting, not eating nothing. And then the feast will come and it'll be like, whoa, here comes the feast. Sorry, Rara Vijajal. This body is a lump of ignorance. The senses are a network of paths leading to death. Huh? Krishna is very kind. Now, of all of the senses, the tongue is the most voracious and uncontrollable. Jitindriya Charitayika. Jive file vishaya sagore. Tarana je javayati loba moya surdur mati takai jata kotina samsare. So to break that cycle of birth and death, we need to control the senses. So Krishna is very kind. He gives us prasadam. Jai Haribo. Let's eat 5 times more than anybody else. And then, you know, tomorrow morning when it's time to get up for the morning program and chant around, she's like, oh, what happened? Wake up on a Monday morning after the Sunday feast and there's the thing, who said there's no such thing as a hangover in Krishna consciousness? I ate too much sweet rice. And I lay awake in my bed all night trying to digest my prasadam. I didn't get any sleep. So we have to be careful. Ahara aratam. We eat what is required. But for festivals, Lord Chaitanya actually engaged. You know, he encouraged the devotees because it's a positive engagement. It's a celebration. And especially when we're youthful then, and full of vigour, then we can engage in these celebrations. Because ultimately, you know, the whole purpose of fasting is what? Is to remember Krishna. Every time we get hungry, we think, oh, it's Lord Ram's appearance day. So automatically, we think of Krishna as a result of our fasting. We don't do it every day, but on special occasions, on the ditti of, you know, on the occasion of the particular event, then we get spiritual benefit from doing that, because every time we are impelled by the mind and the senses to go in a particular direction, we pull it back and we control it and we remember the personality that is, whose appearance or disappearance or the lila or whatever, we remember those things naturally. We remember those things. So controlling the mind and the senses and the physical apparatus, this is actually conducive to devotional service. Living an ordered, structured life where our activities are regulated by the proper means, this is also beneficial for spiritual life. Renunciation will come automatically. It shouldn't be forced. False renunciation, what is it? Falgam vairagya uchate. Prabhupada talks about the river Falgu and how if you go to the river Falgu, it has there's no water. You think, what kind of a river is this? There's no water. But if you dig 2 or 3 feet down, then there's water. So we, you know, be very, very renounced, but actually the desire is still there. So rather than try to be artificially renounced, we renounce our renunciation and we engage our mind and senses in Krishna's service. In that way, we then cultivate renunciation by a positive engagement in devotional activities. That will automatically bring about the higher taste, which will automatically bring about that sense of renunciation that's manifest in a personality like Raghunath does. Not to be imitated. Not to be imitated. In fact, if we force ourselves to do things artificially, then we can actually seriously damage our devotional progress. We can even hurt ourselves physically, if not emotionally. So that's why this yukta-hara, vihara, you know, yukta here translated as proper, yukta in the Bhagavad Gita as regulated is what's recommended. Not overdoing it, not underdoing it, but being sensible. So does anybody have any comments or questions on any of these points? Cleanliness?
Yes.
Well, cleanliness is an austerity in one sense. You know, people in the mode of ignorance just leave everything, oh, it's okay, just leave it, don't do anything. You know, just everything becomes messy and dirty. and where there's a clean environment, then that's actually uplifting for one's consciousness, elevating for one's consciousness. That's why in the morning when we rise out of bed, we're sort of like, what's going on? We hop in the shower, and then we go, oh, right, okay, let's go. Just by the act of pouring water over the body, one becomes invigorated. Yeah? And all the dullness and confusion of the night's sleep, it just gets washed off. So, temples, well, everywhere, motor cars, homes, kitchens, living quarters, all of these things should be kept clean. Then when it's clean, there, by that association, one's Krishna consciousness is actually nourished by that cleanliness, where it's all filthy and dirty and the mode of ignorance, then our consciousness is affected by the association that it keeps. Right? What's your ashram like for cleanliness?
Try your best.
Try our best. Yeah, that worries me. The Brahmachari ashram is, Actually, our Brahmachari ashram is not too bad at the moment. I hope yours is like that too. Clean. When everything's all thrown around and the clothes are just sort of lying where you stepped out of them. Dishes in the sink. Toilet hasn't been cleaned for 5 years. Yuck. Just brings the consciousness down. When everything's clean but it's an austerity, to clean everything properly, make sure that's an austerity. Easy to put off and no, I'll do it tomorrow. Automatically the mode of ignorance is affecting us. So yeah, it's cleanliness is for keeping the consciousness clear and focused. So that there's discrimination. Prabhupada made a comment that, if you're in a situation where you are not observant and you're lazy or blind to the fact that things are not clean or not in a proper state of repair, then you're influenced by the mode of ignorance. The person in the mode of goodness doesn't like to see things in a dirty, unclean, unkept state. And when they see it, they'll do something about it. Oh, this is dirty, fix it. Huh? I know it happens here in the temple room sometimes. When I got back from India, I could see all of this stuff sitting on top of all the pictures. All this dirt. And all the fans had dirt on them. This one needs a clean now too. That looks like it's got Abhishek. The last Abhishek's still on the fan. And then you tell the devotee who cleans the temple room, well, can you clean these things? Oh, nobody told me to do that. What am I going to do that for? This is the mode of ignorance creeping in. Of course, we don't, we don't see it. As it was interesting the other day, one of our friends came from Sydney and she came into the temple room and she was telling me, and she said, oh, it's so beautiful in the temple room. It's all clean and sparkly. It's so vibrant. It's just like Vaikuntha. I said, well, you can't see the dust on the top of the pictures at the moment, that's all. When I go in the temple room, all I see is the dust. Yep.
That kind of basically, I suppose, as you said, everyone has different levels of what they see as clean.
Of ignorance.
How do you cope with sort of other people? So, I mean, you know, for example, I might be more messy than the next person, but I could be cleaner than another person. So, how do you cope with living with other people when we all have different levels of cleanliness?
Well, I think it's a matter of training, isn't it? Right? It's training. You show people, here, this is what clean means. Shining, sparkling, no dirt. And for some people it's like, oh, really? It's a revelation. Oh, that's what clean is. yeah, that's why we, you know, we need to train. Education is a wonderful thing, and it needs to be modelled also. You know, cleanliness is a behaviour, is a set of behaviours, I guess, which need to be modelled. Cultivated, like knowledge needs to be cultivated, it needs to be modelled, demonstrated, then put into practice. That's more or less how Prabhupada established that in the early days of Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada modelled behaviours that the devotees practiced for many years after, actually, based on his example. And it's coming up, actually. This thing about cleanliness, it comes up next two verses. Two verses away, and then it talks about cleanliness. No, he cleaned it. He cleaned it. Yeah, he cleaned it. He would get the rice, and then the mouldy bits he would cut it off, get rid of it. And then he would just eat the core of the rice. And Lord Chaitanya came to him one day, and he knew what he was doing, and he said, "What do you got there? What are you hiding?" Because Raghunath Das was embarrassed. He didn't want Lord Chaitanya to see that he was eating the rotten remnants of the food that was thrown out. He was embarrassed. So he hid it. And Lord Chaitanya said, "What kind of a feast have you got that you're keeping to yourself?" But, you know, when a devotee gets the best bit of the maha, then they just sort of stash it away. Don't want anybody else to take it. Or if they do take it, "You stole my maha, what are you doing?" Who do you think you are? So Lord Chaitanya was wanting to play a joke on Raghunath Das, and he said, "What is this feast? Because you've got the maha there and you're keeping it for yourself. Why don't you share it with your friends?" And then he grabbed a piece and nectar. The remnants of Raghunath Das. So Lord Chaitanya took those remnants with great satisfaction and relished them as if they were a big, huge feast. But Raghunath Das cleaned it. It wasn't dirty. He was just being very renowned. He just was depending wholly and solely on Krishna for his maintenance. And he saw, you know, this just eating business as, this is just a distraction for my service to the Lord. you know, I've got to come to the bodily platform and feed this lump bag of bones. Very elevated position. You know, I'm not this body. This is taking I'm not this body to, you know, total detachment from the body. Whereas we can't, you know, we can't do that. If I fed you just 6 grains of rice every day, you'd go nuts. Huh? You're not the body, Prabhu. Huh? Just chant Hare Krishna. Krishna will sustain you. We can't do that. Yet for Raghunath Das, that was an entirely natural thing to do. Yes, he did, obviously. But, you know, some devotees have certain opulences that they display. They manifest certain vibhuti, if you like. Right? Certain shakti that's given to them by Krishna. Raghunath Das' example was of extreme renunciation because of his depth of absorption in Krishna consciousness, obviously. So that was his service. He was encouraged to do that by Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya didn't encourage all of his disciples like that. Right? So depends. Just to show as an example, he's an exemplar, highly elevated exemplar of renunciation. But not everybody was encouraged like that. Anything else? No breakfast this morning, so we can go a little longer. Okay, Gajaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Kora Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Ram Navami Mahotsava ki jai.